It was a Thursday evening when I took the last delivery of my shift. The workload was a lot since another delivery guy simply stopped picking up calls and stopped showing up to work for a week, so the rest of us were working overtime. The address which we were given led to a house on the outskirts of town, a place so secluded and dilapidated it seemed to devour the dying light. My name is Jake, and this was the night my understanding of reality was shattered. The order was strange from the start. One large pizza, no specific toppings, pay in cash upon delivery, and the note added, leave on the dining table. Curious, but I've seen stranger requests in this job. As my bike crunched up the gravel driveway, I got a strange vibe from the place. This has to be a mistake, I muttered, checking the GPS again, but the coordinates were precise. The air grew colder as I approached the front door, pizza box in hand. I knocked, half hoping no one would answer. Silence greeted me, so I turned the knob, finding it strangely unlocked. Hello? My voice felt absorbed by the darkness within. Pizza delivery? No response. The interior was shrouded in shadows, dust motes dancing in the air, boarded up windows, broken frames with strange landscape art. I found the dining room by intuition more than sight, my footsteps echoing too loudly on the wooden floor. The table was there, as the note instructed, but it wasn't empty. A set of fine, dusty utensils lay in wait. Even the entire table was covered in a thick blanket of dust. But to my shock, there was a clean square shape exactly like the pizza delivery box. I placed the box down. This is too weird, I said aloud, deciding to leave. That's when I heard it, the soft sound of a chair scraping against the floor behind me. I whipped around, but there was nothing. My heart raced, but as I turned to leave, I froze. I realized that the portraits on the wall had changed. Where there had been landscapes and abstracts before, now there were people, smiling, but with eyes too hollow, too knowing. Panic set in then. I rushed to the door, but it wouldn't budge. This isn't happening, I gasped, my breath fogging in the air that had turned inexplicably cold. I turned back to the room, and that's when the whispers started, voices overlapping, coming from nowhere and everywhere, and then a woman's whisper into my right ear.
The meal must be finished.
I tried to cover my ears, but the sound was inside my head. The temperature dropped suddenly, my exhalations a visible vapor in the beam of my flashlight. Then, the laughter began. A child's laugh, innocent if not for the malevolence behind it. Shadows danced along the walls, shapes that were human but not quite. I fell backward, my back hitting the cold wood of the dining table. I kid you not, the pizza box was open. Inside, there wasn't a pizza, but a grotesque replica made of what looked like flesh. I gagged, the smell hitting me, a stench of decay and something far worse. Please, just let me go, I found myself begging, to whom or what, I didn't know. The woman's whispers grew louder, the child's laughter more insistent. The room suddenly shook, and one portrait fell down. An old man with no eyes, a tall woman with no eyes, and a little girl, no eyes. The temperature suddenly normalized, the shadows receded and the laughter faded into the ether. I was alone, or so I thought, until I turned to see a figure standing at the threshold of the dining room. A child, no older than 7, her eyes empty voids in the dim light.
Are you going to join us for dinner?
She asked, her voice a chilling mix of innocence and something darker. I couldn't speak. Couldn't move. The girl's eyes, voids that seemed to pull at my soul, held me captive.
I can't. I have to leave.
But you're our guest,
she said, tilting her head in a 360 and revealing the same face on what should have been the back of her head.
And the meal isn't finished yet.
As she spoke, the air around us grew thick, oppressive, as if her words were woven from the very darkness that filled the house. I mustered all the courage I could find. "I don't belong here," I declared, though my voice betrayed my terror. The girl simply smiled, a gesture devoid of warmth.
"Nobody does until they do,"
she replied cryptically, before fading into the shadows, leaving me in trembling solitude. My heart pounded against my ribcage as I scanned the room for any sign of escape. The portraits on the walls now appeared to watch me, their eyes following my every move with silent accusation. I couldn't shake the feeling of being manipulated. Scared, I hurled myself at the window, but instead of it shattering, it was like I had jumped at a wall, hurting my shoulder. Panic clawed at my throat as I realized that I was a rat in a trap, a plaything for forces beyond my understanding. That's when the house began to truly reveal its horrors. The floor beneath me started vibrating. The loud shrieking of a woman suddenly echoed everywhere around the house. And behind the child, I finally saw a dark figure, a fat man in a bloody night robe, sitting in silence and looking at me. Except he had no eyes, just blackness.
"Are you going to join us for dinner?"
The child spoke again. I was beyond terrified, so I just gave in. I slowly walked up to the table, picked up a piece of flesh, and closed my eyes as I brought it to my mouth. I had submitted. I took the bite and suddenly felt a familiar taste of bread. I opened my eyes to find myself back in an empty, dusty, dilapidated room. The strange eyeless spirits were gone, the shrieking of a woman was gone, and I just found myself eating a slice of pizza, which had been ordered, surrounded by total silence. I could just see my own reflection in the mirror, with tears flowing down my eyes. In the midst of all of this, a new sound pierced the air. A phone ringing, its tone discordant and jarring. My phone. With hands trembling so violently I could barely grasp it, I answered. "Hello?"
"Jake, it's me," came the reply, a voice I recognized as my manager's from the pizza place. "What's taking so long? You've been out for 2 hours.
Hours? It couldn't be. It felt like only minutes had passed since I'd entered the house.
"I'm trapped," I gasped.
"Please, you have to help me. The house on..." But the address, clear in my mind moments before, now eluded me.
"The house on..."
I couldn't remember it, and started crying.
"Jake, calm down. What house? You're not making any sense."
I glanced around, desperate for something to anchor me to reality. That's when I noticed it. The pizza box, lying open on the table, but the entire pizza was gone. Eaten.
"Jake, listen to me. Why is it showing an order from you in the system?"
"What?"
"An order placed by you, from your number."
I couldn't believe it. I switched to the pizza app immediately and saw the details for this order. I dropped the phone in shock, my mind reeling, as I realized that the order was placed under my name. I quickly picked up the phone and turned around to see the door wide open. I ran from that house like my life depended on it. I finally got in touch with the other delivery guy who had stopped coming and learned that he had ended up at the house exactly like me, and he experienced a similar haunting, which all died down when he finally took a bite out of the pizza which he was delivering. The pizza place quickly updated the systems to not take orders from that address, and no delivery guy ever went to that house again. The evening air was brisk, carrying the sound of laughter and music from our sorority house. It was supposed to be a night of freedom, of celebration, but as the events unfolded, it morphed into a saga of terror that would forever haunt my memories. It started with a joke, a cruel, thoughtless prank we played on the pizza delivery guy. We'd seen him before, his awkward shuffles and the way he struggled to meet anyone's gaze. His name was Eric, a fact we knew because someone had dared to ask once, hoping to coax a smile from him. That night, under the influence of a few Jaeger bombs, some bong hits, and the heady thrill of our sisterhood, we decided to take it further. I, being the newest member of our sorority, was pushed into pretending to flirt with him, luring him into believing there was a party invitation with his name on it, while we secretly ran an Insta Live for the followers of our sorority page.
Hey there.
I spoke seductively.
We've been waiting for you. The party doesn't start until you walk in.
Here's your pizzas. He managed to speak as I leaned closer to his face, like I was about to kiss him, and held on while my sisters laughed their hearts out. That'll be $30.
If I make out with you, could you do it for free? I'll make out for 1 minute if you make this free.
The flush of embarrassment on his face was visible, even under the dim porch light. But it was the flicker in his eyes, a spark of something dark and unrecognizable that should have warned us. How about something a little bit more and you get free pizzas for the next 3 parties? I was shook a bit, as his shy, nerdy demeanor suddenly gave way to a confident, creepy one. My friend leaned into my ear to tell me that over 3,000 people had joined our live. We had to push it further.
What do you mean by a little bit more?
Well, we are all adults here, you know?
Free pizzas for 3 parties?
Yes.
How about 5?
3.
Make it 5 and I'll go further.
3.
Make it 5 and my gorgeous friend will join.
3.
Make it 5 and...
Stop! He yelled before taking his free hand and choking me while staring into my eyes with his red, mad ones. You don't talk to me like that! It was at this point that my sisters intervened and threatened him with the Instagram Live. Surprisingly, he didn't just run away, but retreated while laughing like a maniac, still looking at us all with vengeance in his eyes. We weren't prepared for what was to transpire next. Eric returned sometime later under the guise of night. We were all sloshed at this point when the lights suddenly went off. It wasn't long before we noticed that a lot of girls couldn't find their phones. Panic set in, but it was the silence that followed, a quiet so profound it screamed, that truly unsettled us. And then came the knocking, systematic, deliberate. I encountered him in the living room, where the moonlight cast his shadow across the floor, elongating it into something monstrous. His voice, when he spoke, was eerily calm, a stark contrast to the chaos he had unleashed. "You made me the center of your game," he said, tilting his head, studying me as if I was an interesting specimen. "Now, you're the center of mine." Suddenly, there was a loud scream from the basement. I looked for just a second, but in that time, Eric was gone. My bestie, Jennifer, who was laughing the loudest during our prank, was found in the basement, her lips cut from ear to ear, her eyes gouged out and replaced by the pepperoni toppings from a pizza. Before we could even process what had transpired, we heard screams from the bathroom on the second floor. Lisa and Marisa, twin sisters, were lying with wet clothes in the bathtub, squeezed together, drowning in their own pool of blood which dripped from their slashed necks, and one slice of pizza stuck between their dead mouths. Eric's presence became more brazen, his encounters with us more frequent. He delighted in our fear, drawing it out with the precision of a maestro. His anger was a tangible thing, flaring at the slightest provocation, his mood swings erratic and dangerous. We started running, but the doors were locked, our phones were missing, and the drinks had rendered most of us incapacitated. "You think you can outsmart me?" he challenged, cornering me in the kitchen. His breath was hot against my face, his eyes wild. "I'll take care of your friends first. Let the terror marinate slowly. And just when you will beg me to kill you fast, I will suffocate you slowly." I realized then his need for control, for acknowledgement, was his weakness. It was a dangerous game engaging with a psychopath, but I had no choice. I needed to keep him talking, keep him focused on me somehow.
"Eric, you've already won. We're scared, aren't we? Isn't that what you wanted?"
"Oh, it's only just begun." His threat hung between us, a promise of horrors yet to come. Eric's game was one of psychological warfare, each move destined to break us further, to tear us from any semblance of hope. As the night wore on, the rules of his twisted game became clear. He wanted us isolated, afraid, and utterly at his mercy. He would appear, sometimes as a whisper of movement in the darkness, other times as a full, terrifying presence. His manic laughter was a chilling reminder of the power he held over us. The climax of the night came with a chilling clarity. We had found 6 dead bodies in a span of a few minutes and were scarred for life. But Eric had grown overconfident, his interactions with me longer, more taunting. It was during one such encounter that I saw my chance. He had backed me into a corner of the living room, the bloodied knife in his hand, catching the moonlight in a sinister glint. "You see, Carly, what happens when you mess with the wrong guy? I'll just put 3 more of your friends to sleep and then come for you, unless you want to give up right now." His attention was so focused on me, on the fear he expected to see, that he didn't notice the heavy bookend I had silently grasped from the shelf behind me. With a surge of adrenaline, I swung it with all my might, connecting with the side of his head. The impact sent him staggering, the knife clattering to the ground. It was the opening I needed. I lunged for the knife, my fingers wrapping around the handle just as he recovered his balance. But I didn't hesitate, didn't give him a chance to regain control. With a cry that was part fear, part rage, I swung the knife, catching him off guard. The blade made contact, and he fell, a look of shock etched into his features. The remaining girls, drawn by the noise, found me standing over Eric, the knife in my hand and determination in my heart. Together, we bound his hands and feet, a grim solidarity in our actions. We pulled out his own phone and called the police while kicking his unconscious, bleeding body. When the authorities arrived, they found us huddled together. Eric was taken away. The aftermath was a whirlwind of questions and flashbulbs, our sorority house a scene of interest and horror. But amid the chaos, there was a sense of closure. We had survived, not just that night, but the darkness that had threatened to consume us.